Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Frances Nesbitt and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have. You can get in touch with the show by text to 086-353-7782 or by phone on 776-2777 or email kitchengarden@ckc.ie. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, don't bother texting as we won't get to see your message, but you can still email us. Today on the show, we'll be talking about a change in the weather, I think, for the worse, but mostly we'll be talking about pollinators, bees and hoverflies, and how we can plant our gardens, farms and public spaces to help them. We'll be joined on the phone a little later on by Dr. Una Fitzpatrick, ecologist and coordinator of the National Pollinator Plan. Sorry about that. Mags, how are you? How was your week?
Very good. How are you?
Good, good, good. It's cold.
It's very cold. I wasn't expecting it to be so cold this morning.
Pull out that microphone a little bit to yourself there, Mags. Yeah, no, it's a real change in the weather for the worse.
Quite a bitter, because it didn't look cold from the inside this morning, but actually it is very cold.
Nice and bright, but it is very cold. And it's going to get worse, apparently, for the next week.
There's snow forecast and all sorts, I think.
Oh, my God.
Which I think we've had enough snow this year already, but anyway.
I hope I remember to mention it, but just in case I don't, at the end, in the list of jobs, one of the things I did have written down was to check the feed levels in beehives. So if you're a beekeeper, heft the hive, as they say, so lift it to see the weight of the hive, and just make sure that they still have stores inside, because laying may have started, because there was a bit of mild weather there for a while, and they certainly were out foraging, but they won't be getting out now for the next week, and stores may be low. So if they need a feed, drop it in now.
I need to check mine, actually.
Yeah, so some fondant or some syrup, either, I think, at this time of the year.
Because I fed them earlier in the year, in the winter, but they hadn't, last time I checked, they hadn't actually eaten that much of it. They had enough of their own. So, but yeah, I'll try and get in and have a look.
But they'll go through it really, really quickly.
When they need, okay.
Yeah, so if they're kept in now for a week because of the extreme cold, then they'll go through quite a bit of it, particularly if numbers are kind of picking up, you know.
Okay.
So we might remind people of that again later in the end and later in the show. And it's kind of appropriate given that we'll be talking about pollinators today. But food for humans in this kind of cold snap, it's back to the hearty, warming dinners,
yeah,
isn't it?
You need something kind of comforting. I think this evening is definitely like a big pot or a stew or something like that evening. And I think everyone deserves a little bit of cake.
Oh, really, cake. Nice. Yeah, a bit of a treat.
Yeah. Well, particularly as it's your birthday weekend. So I think we do need some cake. I have a very nice recipe. Would you like it?
Yeah, please. Would I like the cake or the recipe?
Well, you can have both, maybe.
Did you bring in the cake?
This is a kind of a fruity, hearty cake that will last in the tin all week and stuff. You can have a little bit every day if you like. I use kind of a mix of white flour and wholemeal flour. Or you can use all wholemeal or kind of a light, kind of a spelt flour if you wish. So you need 225 grams of flour. So go for half and half, half wholemeal, half white. 200 grams of butter, 200 grams of soft brown sugar, 4 eggs, good big eggs, and then 450 grams of dried fruit. So I used figs, apricots, dates and some prunes in whatever portions you really like. If you like figs, put in more figs. They're quite expensive, but or apricots. So grated zest of 1 lemon and 1 orange, 80 grams of marmalade, some baking powder, teaspoon of baking powder, and a good generous teaspoon of mixed spice.
Now, if you don't mind me saying so, that's kind of old school recipes or like ingredients, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it is, really, yeah. But I think that's like, you know, if it's not broken, just don't fix it.
Yeah.
You know, this makes a really, really kind of lush cake, but with a lot of fruit, so it's not a very, it's not too heavy on the sugar, I suppose. Well, there's lots of fruit sugars in it.
Sounds delicious.
It is delicious, yeah. And if you really like, you can sprinkle some almonds on top if you want to give it a bit of a crunchy top or something.
Oh, lovely. And what do you do with all of that then?
So you want to beat the butter and sugar, and then you'll have your flour and salt and mixed spice and baking powder together. So add in a spoon of your flour mixture, an egg, some more of your flour, another egg, some more of your flour, another egg, and then just beat all that together. And then you're going to add in your fruit, your zest and your marmalade. And you're going to pour it into a nice tin and into the oven, 180 degrees. It does take a while to cook, so about could take 50 minutes.
Okay, that's a long bake.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I've had that cake at your place, haven't I?
Yeah.
That's the really tasty, lush kind of one.
Actually, most people who've had it at my house will often say it's their favourite cake.
And if somebody was to describe to me, you know, a cake with prunes and so on, I wouldn't really go for it.
No.
But no, I've had that one. That's really
delicious.
I think
the figs actually make it nice. Mm. And I've used dates in the past as well, really good dates actually, medjool dates, which have kind of a nice depth of kind of sweetness. But, you know, so that makes quite a difference actually. And I think in these things, if you use good quality fruit, it does make quite a difference.
A cup of tea or a cup of coffee and a slice of that beside the fire or sitting next to a radiator looking out.
Yeah.
It's definitely the way to go.
I do sometimes put a little bit of butter on it then when you're having it. Yeah.
Touch more decadence.
Yes.
And is that okay for Lent now, all of that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think we've decided not to give up, you know, things like that for Lent. Now it's about kind of doing, you know, giving up plastics maybe, or, you know, walking instead of driving or something, doing more of those kind of carbon Lent, isn't that what we were calling it
so
last week?
Add good things to do instead of taking away good things to eat.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea. Yeah. And some more kind of hearty warmers then. I have a few bits and pieces in the garden that I really need to kind of use up now before planting season kicks off again in earnest, and one of the things I'm left with is some leeks, and of course I still have overwintered stored spuds.
Oh yeah.
So I was thinking about making a big pot of leek and potato soup, which is a particular favourite of mine. Really, really delicious. Do you ever make that?
I love leeks, yeah. I think leeks are a great vegetable actually, and they make a really good soup, very good for you as well.
They're a fantastic ingredient. Whenever I'm roasting pork now, I discovered, I think I mentioned it before last year, roasting the pork on some leeks,
just
in the bottom of the pan, and they kind of slow braise then in the pork fat.
Yeah.
Oh my God, at the end, they're absolutely delicious.
I have a nice recipe for if you've got some mashed potato left over.
Oh yeah?
Finely slice your leeks and saute them in butter, and then kind of just put that onto the base of a baking dish, and add your mashed potato on top of that, just kind of pile it on, and then grate some cheddar over it and pop it into the oven, and that's really nice accompaniment to like a beef stew or a venison stew or a kind of a veggie dish as well. Something nice and hearty, plenty of protein and carbs and leeks and flavour.
Yeah, but they do add a gorgeous flavour to anything.
Yeah,
like
they do.
That.
They do.
The soup is really easy as well. I know we've gone through a few soup recipes over our time here, but it's just such a simple and nutritious and hearty thing to make.
And really cheap to make, actually.
Really cheap to make.
And like a basic kind of, for most soups, a cup of potato and a cup of onion, and then three cups of whatever veg you're using. So if you did cup of potato, cup of onion, and then for leek and potato, I would probably do two cups of leek and a cup of potato. You want to saute those, and that's, you know, and stock and pepper and salt. That'll make your soup. You can add cream into potato and leek if you like, but you don't have to.
Yeah, I'd like a bit of cream in there, but not everybody would be a fan of that. It's a handy way of using up leftover spuds too. Like if you did have any after, you know, the Sunday dinner or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And perfect for freezing, even if you're using leftover veg. Perfect for freezing.
I would always make soup to put in the freezer.
Yeah.
Make it for that day and then put a couple of bags into the freezer for other days in different size portions and that.
Now, I know this is like purely in my own head, but I find it difficult, even though I feel like a hearty kind of meal because it's getting cold again, but I had already switched into spring mode. So I would find it very difficult to go back to a kind of beef stew or something like that, which real wintry stuff. So I was thinking about a risotto.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of hearty and is kind of warming.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a little lighter. And again, something you could use leeks in.
Leek and bacon would be very nice. Or what else would you suggest?
Butter. If there was any squash left in the stores, butternut squash is always good, but you can't go wrong with leek and bacon. Or even chunks of chicken, maybe leek and chicken. In your risotto, absolutely love making risotto.
I think leeks work really well with cheese. Mm. Those two work too well, so it's good in a risotto. If you're using butternut squash in a risotto, I would finely chop the butternut squash and roast it for a couple of minutes first, and then add it in at the very end. So you've got nice little kind of roasted chunks in it, which works quite well.
Yeah, it brings out a lovely kind of depth of flavour.
Yeah, yeah, and it looks good because the kind of the chunks in the risotto, the variation, I suppose, looks quite nice.
I just realised we've spent about 10 minutes talking about food now. We haven't mentioned the Burrell Bollinators. Before we get on to them, have you been busy in the garden doing anything yourself?
I did plant a tree, actually. I planted a magnolia tree during the week.
Very good.
Planted it out my kitchen window, so that when you look out that window, well, probably in 20 years' time, you'll see a big bloom of kind of their pinky purple, biggish flower. So that'll be nice.
Well, that's when we plant a tree, really, we're planting for future generations, unless we're filling in a little gap or something like that.
Yeah.
But I often thank the people who planted the beautiful lime tree avenue out at Crowan. 1743 they went in.
Wow.
And they never got to see them in the splendour that I get to see them in every day, you know. And it's the same in our parks or any of those kind of country estates. So anybody who plants a tree, be it a magnolia or an oak, you know, we're really planting it for somebody else to enjoy it.
Somebody will enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah. And it's good for, well, it's good for the environment too.
Yeah. Well, this should flower, I think, next year. So that'd
it's
be good.
It's an ideal time to be getting kind of trees in. You've finished planting your hedge?
My hedge, yes.
Excellent.
So yes, the that took a few goes, to be honest, weather-wise, and that we were caught with the snow. And then, but yeah, so we did about 22 metres of hedge through the garden, so it's going to break up the orchard and where the raspberries are and the vegetables will be. So yeah, I'm happy with it, actually.
Good.
I think in a couple of years, the place will have a nice shape and form to it. So yeah.
Well, gardening really is about optimism and looking to the future, isn't it?
Yeah.
And at this time of the year, I absolutely love it. People are thinking about the seeds that they're going to plant and putting in things and expecting growth and looking forward to colour and looking forward to veg. The optimism is at absolute peak levels.
There was one day during the week that was really sunny. Was that Monday or Tuesday, maybe? Tuesday. And it just had that feeling of get out and plant and grow things. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get another day like that soon, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. Well, after this cold snap passes, maybe. This week, in terms of food events and stuff like that, I believe yesterday was National Toast Day.
National Toast Day in the UK. The UK seems to be great. They have a day, every week there's a day. There was Pizza Day, there's, I don't know, everything. So yesterday was National Toast Day, so you were encouraged to go and have toast. Good quality toast.
Do we do National Toast
Day? We don't do all the days that they do in the UK here, really. Okay. Like, we have National Potato Day, so that's a good day. We have Pie Day, International Pie Day.
Do we have
Guinness
Day?
That's coming up soon, actually, I'm sure. Yeah, we do. Arthur Guinness Day, don't we? Remember we had that for a couple of years.
Yeah, that was a bit controversial.
Yes, it was. So,
so what were they doing for Toast Day?
They were just
then
encouraging everybody to eat good quality bread and toast it.
And I presume this was kind of sponsored by the major bakeries or something.
No, it wasn't really. It was more the real bread people, actually.
Ah.
Yeah, so, and I think they're kind of getting ready for this National Bread Week coming up soon. So, but that's the real bread stuff. Maybe it's called Real Bread Week. That's mostly UK. It hasn't really, actually, to be honest, taken off here. There's kind of a small group of people and it really takes one person to go and organise it. So, but yeah, we will talk about it during that week.
One other announcement I saw during the week, and I thought this was a really good initiative. It's actually the 4th National Workplace Wellbeing Day, and it's going to take place on Friday the 13th of April. And I mention it now because it was in the news. IBEC are trying to get companies to sign up to it now and kind of prepare for the day ahead. And it's basically where, over the past few years, thousands of employers have participated in the campaign, which aims to improve employee well-being by promoting physical activities and healthy eating in the workplace. It's an initiative of Food Drink Ireland, which is part of the IBEC group, which represents Irish businesses. And what they found is that setting up employee exercise groups is one of the most effective ways of promoting greater physical activity in the workplace. And of course, happier and healthier employees makes for a better company, better work environment, and fewer days kind of lost to illness and stuff. So IBEC are encouraging people to visit their website and sign up or to learn more. And there's free tools and information there on what people can do in the workplace. It's the kind of thing that a very sports good. And social club could start, yeah. You know, and get people signed up.
Do they
for.
Still have the, you know, the best place to work in Ireland every year? Do they still do that?
They do, yeah.
I worked for a company, well, it's a good few years ago now, but they were placed number 10.
Oh, very good.
One year, yeah, there was yeah. great excitement. Now, they were quite good to work for, in fairness. But we used to have yoga at lunchtime.
Oh.
It was laid on by the company, which was very nice.
Well, I was at an event in Kilkenny last night, Tech Thursday, the 14th Tech Thursday, actually, in Kilkenny now, where people from the kind of tech community get together and discuss a particular topic. And last night, it was about remote working and touched on some of the issues that companies have about attracting people into the company, retaining those people. There was talk of smart working from remote locations. A lot of people in Kilkenny commute to Dublin or work for companies that are based in Dublin. How can that be handled better? And of course, there's some physical restraints like broadband speeds and so on. But one of the issues that was covered was, if you want to hold on to somebody who's really good, allowing a certain flexibility and showing them a bit of trust is a good way of doing that. And if you're able to cut down on their commute, you can even pay them less because actually getting to work costs less. And then there was a lot of talk of the companies in Dublin and what they do to attract employees, and particularly on the in the tech sector. There's a lot of well-being initiatives. You know, one big company in Dublin runs a lot of exercise camps. There's a climbing wall out the back of the place so you can go climbing at lunchtime.
Google or somebody.
Exactly, yeah. One of those big, big companies. But a lot of stuff around kind of, you know, every once a week there's somebody comes in and does a class on kind of nutrition or does a class on yoga.
Wow.
Or does, yeah. But when you think about it, if you've those skills that are really, really valuable and there's companies all over the place up there that, you know, are trying to poach you, your company will do everything it can to hold on to you.
Mm.
Right, we better take a break. And when we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit about bee-friendly plants.
Okay.
And what we can do in the garden or on the farm or on the allotment to help our pollinators. We'll be back just after these. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here with Mags Morrissey. Thank you to those who have contacted the show. And there's a text in here that will probably be important to some of our listeners. All-Ireland Schools Junior B Camogie semi-final replay. Full-time score from Jenkinstown. Castlecomer Community School 1-8. Borrisocane Community College 2-4. Castlecomer now into the All-Ireland final. I should add, of course, that 8 of the starting team were from Conaghy Shamrocks. Other 7 from St. Martin's. So congratulations to all concerned there. You can get in touch with the show here by text to 086-353-7782 or by phone on 776-2777. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, please don't text the show as we won't get to see your message, but you can still email us kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, Mags, everybody's kind of thinking about the plants and seeds to get sowing and the growing year ahead. And one thing, like some simple changes now, can make a big difference to the kind of fauna in the garden later on in the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And pollinators are very topical, and there's an awful lot of chat about them. There was a feature on Ear to the Ground recently. But do you want to tell us what pollinators are, actually, and what they do and how they do it?
Well, generally what people think of when we talk about pollinators is the bee, and the bee that they generally think of is the bee that gives us honey, so the honeybee. But actually, there's 97, 98 species of bee in Ireland. So there's 20 bumblebee species. Some of those are particularly rare. And there's 77 solitary bee species. So some of those are mining bees, and some of them then are the type that live in those little bee hotels that we make. But the bumblebee species, the early bumblebee is out and about already. So I've seen the early bumblebee out in the garden over the last week. And that's an overwintered queen who's hibernated in a nice kind of warm nest in the ground. And she'll start foraging now to gather pollen, which will allow her to raise the first generation of bumblebees. And then once that first generation are out and starting to work in a few weeks, her work is done. All she'll have to do then is lay eggs for the rest of the summer.
So will she stay in then? Does she?
She stays in after that. So at the moment she's out foraging, yeah. And that poor creature will have to visit something like 6,000 flowers per day.
So busy as a bee doesn't come from nowhere.
Really, no. That, like, 6,000 flowers in a day, yeah, to gather enough nectar to kind of give herself energy, and then enough pollen, which is the food that the young larvae needs to kind of to raise. And then she'll be building a nest in order to provide an environment for those larvae to grow.
Okay.
But once the first generation gets to work, then they take over that kind of job. Now, each of them will still visit 6,000 flowers in a day. And of course, once they visit one flower and they take the pollen or nectar from that, that flower then takes a certain amount of time to recharge itself. So it's not done for the day, or they haven't finished with that flower.
And so somebody can come back to that and sometime later. And
exactly.
Okay.
And if you observe the bees, so be it the bumblebees or the solitary bees or even the honeybee, you'll often see them fly in front of a flower and then move on to another one,
yes,
without landing.
Yes, I've seen that.
And what they've discovered in recent years is that each bee that lands on the flower leaves behind a little footprint. And that footprint degrades over time. And our bees are clever enough to see the degrading footprint and know when the last time a bee was there, wow, to work on that flower. And they also know that type of flower recharges in X amount of time.
Good Lord.
So they're able to save energy by not visiting flowers that won't be recharged if another bee has been there recently.
It's like an out of stock kind of sign.
Isn't that incredible?
That is quite incredible.
And for some reason, they tend to, when they're working a particular flower, they tend to stick with that particular flower and work it for a while. So if they're working on the borage, they'll stay on the borage. If they're working dandelion, they'll stay on the dandelion.
Okay.
Before they then move on to some other type of flower.
Oh, right. I wonder, yeah, why that is. But I suppose things are in flower together, so, you know, you'll have a lot of maybe borage or whatever together, so maybe that's why. Wow, that is fascinating, isn't
it? Yeah, it really is. But one of the... So that early bumblebee kind of indicated to me that they're out and about and they're working, and I've seen some of my own honeybees out working as well and bringing back some pollen. We're still in February. So if we want to kind of support sufficient numbers of these pollinators, the bees that I've mentioned, as well as hoverflies and, to a lesser extent, wasps even, we have to provide a kind of menu for them stretching right through from February until winter kicks in earnest, maybe around the end of October, or even the start of November. So when I think of a pollinator-friendly garden or planted-up area, I think of something that has a huge range.
Yes.
That stretches across that period. Because just like we remind everybody every week to feed the birds in the garden, if you start feeding the birds in your garden and you do that for the first couple of months and you build up a big population of birds who are coming in expecting those seeds and stuff, and then you stop in December or you stop in January, it's a disaster,
yeah,
for the population of birds. And likewise, if we encourage lots and lots of pollinators into the garden and they have a successful summer and they build up large numbers, and then it gets to early winter or very late autumn and suddenly they've nothing to eat, there's not going to be a big population over the winter.
Well, one tree I know is very good for them during the winter is the strawberry tree.
That's right.
Or the arbutus.
Mm.
I planted one a couple of years ago, actually, for that very purpose.
Native to Ireland as well?
Yes, native to Cork.
Mm.
And a nice kind of, it's not too big, so if you don't have a huge garden and stuff, it's a good size.
Yeah.
Slow growing, but...
We'll be talking in a little while to Dr. Una Fitzpatrick, an ecologist who works down with the National Biodiversity Centre in Waterford, and she's the coordinator of the National Pollinator Plan. And I'm really keen to talk to Una about the encouragement that they have in place for the likes of county councils and companies and farmers. But on the smaller scale, in the garden, there's lots that we could be doing. So, you know, a few of the simple tips that the lads down in the National Biodiversity Centre give is to do less, really, which is something that we've often talked about. So allocate a piece of the lawn where you allow the grass to grow wild and encourage wildflowers in amongst the grass. Mow less frequently, mm-hmm, so that you allow flower heads on the flowers that are in the lawn to actually develop. And don't take out some of the most important plants for the native bees, which are the things that we tend to call weeds.
Dandelions.
So things like brambles, clovers, thistles, ivy, nettles, and yeah, dandelions. These are all important sources of food for lots of different types, yeah, of pollinators.
Dandelions are one of the really important ones because they're early. Mm. So we're all off the hook. We don't have to weed dandelions now.
Yeah. And when you're thinking about the plants to add a bit of colour to the garden, so lots of people grow annuals and some are bedding plants and so on, because they're an instant flash of colour in the garden, very easy to kind of move around, very easy to grow, very inexpensive to grow. But a lot of them, unfortunately, are absolutely useless to the pollinators. So things like geraniums and begonias and busy lizzies and petunias, they're lovely to look at, but they have virtually no pollen and or nectar, and so they're of very little value to the pollinators. Oh,
so what should we be growing?
Well, there's plenty of beauty to be had in some of the traditional kind of plants. So if you wanted to avoid the annuals and plant maybe some roses, although I'm not a big fan of those, or if you wanted to put in some dahlias, if you're going for dahlias, go for the simpler single types rather than the big fussy flowers, because they tend to be easier for the bees to get at.
Yes.
But like we often say, if you visit other gardens for inspiration, or if you just take a walk through town and you have a look at the plantings on the roundabouts or in the beds around the castle, have a look at the plants that the bees tend to visit. The bees that visit in your area. And I remember one of the beautiful displays of planting near the German retailers here in Kilkenny City last year, looking at it for about 10 or 15 minutes. Very, very nice display, lovely welcome into Kilkenny, but there wasn't a single bee moving on that bed of flowers that the council had spent their time and effort planting up, simply because it was full of that list of plants that
begonias I was just talking about. Yeah, I've never liked begonias, I have to say. I didn't know why. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, well, the bees tend not to like them either. But some of the ornamental kind of plants, like borage is a lovely plant.
Yeah,
very, very easy to grow. Gorgeous little flower, and bees absolutely love it. Columbine, delphiniums, globe thistle, very, very dramatic plant. I grew that last year for the first time. Very, very dramatic, and the bees absolutely love it. And then there's some others that can kind of be left in place that provide a perennial, or at least a display for a couple of years. Things like lavender and oregano.
Okay.
And then simple little ones that once you plant, I find, if you plant once, you'll have them forever. Things like poppy.
Oh,
Self-seed, and they'll be back again and again and again. And then there's some useful ones as well. So I've already mentioned oregano. Lavender is lovely to bring into the house. But things like thyme and rosemary as well, the bees really love.
Do you know what I found actually was rocket that goes, when it goes to seed?
Yeah.
Has a kind of a, not a very big little white flower, delicate enough little flower, but it would be an absolute hive of activity, excuse the pun and stuff. They go mad for it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't take an awful lot of effort to let a little bit of rocket go to seed, really. Sure, it doesn't.
And a lot of the veg that we grow has a habit of bolting. And people, when they see that bolting into flower, things like some of the cabbages or any of the brassicas, really, when that tends to happen, they tend to pull them up and throw them onto the compost heap. I'd say leave them and let a few of them go into flower, because just like happened in that case on the rocket, the brassicas, bees absolutely love those flowers.
Okay.
Yeah, and some of the onions as well, if they bolt and go into flower. All of the alliums are really, really popular with the bees.
Okay.
So leave a couple of them in place, and they produce an absolutely beautiful flower, that big globe type.
That's actually really nice looking, isn't it? I didn't realise that. Okay.
So one of the leeks that's left in the ground at my place now is already, I can see already that it's starting to think about producing seed head.
Okay.
There's a spiky bit just coming into the middle of it. So I'll just leave that in place and garden around it, let it flower later on, and then let the bees enjoy it. And the other thing then, of course, if you want something to do once and leave for a while that'll provide long-term kind of food, particularly in early spring, would be to plant a fruit tree.
Of course.
So apples or cherry or even, you know, currants, we'll need the bees to pollinate those to provide the fruit for us. But while they're there doing the work, they get a little feed as well.
Okay. And you could kind of put those into a hedge almost. Cool.
Exactly. And so if you're planting up a hedge to add a bit of structure to the place as well, think of some flowering varieties that you can add into
Or you can put a little bit of honeysuckle through a hedge, actually. I did that 2 years ago. And that it's beautiful and it's nice in a hedge. It looks right as well.
Yeah. Or allow ivy kind of become established in it. Because I'm not a huge fan of ivy when it's growing on buildings or even on a larger tree. You can tend to choke it. But over winter, it's a fantastic source of pollen and nectar. Those tiny, tiny, tiny little flowers. The bees get so much from them.
I find that hard to imagine, actually. But yeah, and it's a good source of shelter for birds too, actually. Great for nesting, for little birds nesting in that too. So I think if you have a couple of trees, leave half them with their ivy on and maybe take half off.
An old building that's covered in ivy, maybe leave a part of it if it's not causing any harm.
Yeah.
In the community then, so outside the garden, we'll talk to Una a little bit about maybe farms and councils, but a lot of community groups, particularly the tidy towns, are starting to consider the pollinators in their plans as well, because particularly in the tidy towns competition, there's specifically a category now where they can get extra points.
For biodiversity, I think.
For biodiversity, exactly. Yeah. And for thinking of that. And the winner in 2006 was Birr. And Birr Tidy Towns at the time took several steps to allow native wildflowers back into the local community. It was very impressive how they managed to do it while still maintaining like a beautiful town park that didn't look like it had gone kind of wild, you know. So they allowed strips of unmown grass to grow along the river and in some of the parks as cover for insects, so invertebrates, and to allow the wildflowers to bloom and to seed. And they also allowed some verges along the sides of roads to grow, and they would put up the signs to let people know that this area is managed for the pollinators. So it didn't look particularly scruffy, you know, and people knew what it was for.
No, and then when people understand, because I think we've gotten used to having our, you know, public spaces quite manicured looking, so it is something else to get used to, but if there's a sign up, then, well, it's very good education-wise and stuff, and everybody knows then what's happening.
And as with all of these things, I think if a community group or the council or, you know, down at the allotment, if other people are doing it or the committee taken on board, one or two people, you know, as time goes on, they start to do it themselves and it starts to become something that you just generally think about.
Kilkenny Castle have left some areas uncut last year, maybe for a few years, and they had like a massive oxide daisies in the uncut grass very quickly. They just take over very quickly. And it does look very attractive, actually.
They're a beautiful flower, the daisy. So delicate, absolutely gorgeous. But the first step probably is to take a little stock of what it is that you already have in the garden. So find an area maybe that's already been neglected or already has some of those plants in it, or are any of the plants that you already have in place, you know, bee friendly, and work around those.
And even if you just kind of put a structure on it, so if it's a nice circle, it looks perfectly fine, doesn't it? Or a strip or whatever in that. Once it has some kind of a... it looks like it's looked after or cared for, then it looks okay.
Yeah, some kind of geometric shape that's mown into the area of grass adds a bit of kind of character to it. So on the lawn out at Croan, out of the cottages, a couple of years ago, I mowed a labyrinth on the lawn, very large labyrinth.
And very precise.
It's very precise. That would be the engineer in me. But over the last couple of years, I've just kept the same area mown. So the long grass... any plantings that I put into that, I don't mow them. They have a chance to kind of seed and come back. And I've been putting cornflowers and yellow rattle and lots of other kind of things in there that I'm looking forward to seeing over
the
next
few
weeks come back.
There'll be a surprise every year, really, won't there?
Yeah, and you do have to go after some of the bullies. So dock plants, for example, they have a habit. Or our friend the buttercup, he does like to get going in wild areas as well, yeah.
Okay.
And of course the buttercup, I saw again this week somebody sharing, very well-intentioned, but sharing a picture on Twitter of bee-friendly plants, looking out for stuff like that, because I knew we'd cover it on the show today. And the buttercup was one of the flowers that was included in the list. And the buttercup is poisonous to bees.
So does it doesn't kill them, though, does it?
It can actually kill the larvae. So they won't work it. They're smart enough themselves, the honeybee at least, is smart enough to know that it's not a plant that's good for them. But in times of hardship, when they're hungry or when they have larvae back at the hive and they don't have enough pollen stored or fresh pollen elsewhere, they will actually gather pollen from the buttercup and bring back to the hive and feed to the larvae. And that produces a toxin which actually kills the larvae.
Nature is very funny sometimes, the way it evolves things like that.
It really is. A bit of a dead end is the buttercup, yeah, because it's poisonous to ruminants as well if it gets into hay in large quantities.
It's not, no, when it's dried, it's okay.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But before that, yeah. Mm. But then animals are clever enough generally not to eat things that are poisonous.
I'm just thinking then, anything else that we could do around the garden? So, apart from the annuals that we've already mentioned, the wildflowers and the long grass, and leaving in place the kind of dandelion and the vetch and the lovely clover and thistle even, which is nice. Flowering shrubs and ornamental plants are things that we could use a little bit more. And when we're planting these up to kind of fill some ground, just bear in mind things that might be important to the pollinators. Things like heathers, for example, spring to mind. I have lots of heathers planted around the cottages.
Oh, okay, but they need a very acid soil, don't they?
There are two particular types. So one very much favours the acid soil, but one is very tolerant. So I'm on limestone out there, and I haven't replaced it with ericaceous compost or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
So the lowland heathers thrive on the patios at the cottages, and they're surrounded by lime. And I noticed the hens out the other day pecking on the new little buds that were forming. So they like the flower buds. And then if the flowers manage to survive and come out, then the pollinators get to enjoy them too. Right, so that's things that we can do in the garden and things to bear in mind if you're in a community group. And we'll take a little break now. And after the break, hopefully we'll be able to talk to Una Fitzpatrick about what's happening in the National Developer Plan and what's happening on a national level. We'll be back just after these. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie.
Glossary and Goodies. Gorin, specialising in organic foods, home baking, free-range eggs and takeout food. Glossary and Goodies is on the main street in Gorin, beside Old Square in the village. Email siobhan@glossarygoodies.com or phone 056 77 33 799. Glossary and Goodies, Gorin.
Grogan and Brown Artisan Butchers, purveyors of fine food in Kilkenny City. Local food for local people by Grogan and Brown, your award-winning artisan butcher in Smithsland Centre, Loughbuy. Your products on Facebook page Grogan & Brown Artisan Butchers, or call us on 056 77 64 799. Grogan & Brown Artisan Butchers, your award-winning artisan butcher in Smithsland Centre, Loughbuy.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt. I'm here with Mags Marcy, and we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. You can send any questions or comments that you have in by text to 086 353 7782 or by phone on 776 2777. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, please don't text the show, as we won't get to see your message, but you can still email us kitchengarden@crkc.ie. And I'm delighted now to have on the phone Dr. Una Fitzpatrick, ecologist and coordinator of the National Pollinator Plan. Hi, Una.
Hi, Francis.
Thanks very much for joining us on the show today.
No problem.
So, Una, perhaps you tell us a little bit about the National Pollinator Plan, would you?
Yeah, of course. The All-Ireland Pollinator Plan was published in 2015, and it came about really because we realised there's a huge problem with pollination in Ireland. You know, we've got 99 different kinds of bees, but actually one third of them are threatened with extinction. Mm. So there's a huge problem out there in terms of just maintaining that pollination service that we're so dependent on. So, you know, we know pollination is very important and we know there's a problem there. So after that, you sort of bury your head in the sand or you try to do something about it. And the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan was very much like all coming together to try and do something.
And it's, I've been on the website, it's a fantastic website, lots of resources on there, very kind of beautiful PDFs that people can download and guides and stuff. We've already talked a little bit about what we can do ourselves in the garden or on the allotment or maybe as part of a Tidy Towns group, but you also have facilities up there for farms and companies and councils and things that they can do in the public realm.
That's right, yeah. The pollinator plan is very much about looking at the whole landscape and just trying to make it a wee bit more pollinator friendly again. So everyone who has some responsibility for a piece of land, you know, from the smallest garden to the biggest farm, can play a role.
Mm.
And to help make that happen, we wanted to produce really clear guidelines just to show people how to help. So as you say, you know, there are guidelines for gardens, but there are also guidelines for councils and farms, business properties. You know, and then there's more that we plan to do, for example, for transport authorities, for religious properties. You know, really anyone who has responsibility for land can play a role, and we're just trying to make sure everyone knows what to do if they do want to help.
And I presume the public transport groups are on board, so I'm thinking like of all of those railway lines that form these corridors all over the country.
Exactly, yeah, and Irish Rail have been very supportive, you know, as of Transport Infrastructure Ireland, and that's a factor that we hope to tackle this year. You know, just trying to, you're right, I mean, roads and rail have fantastic potential to provide corridors, you know, that would allow bees to move around the landscape a bit better. You know, we're also used to seeing roads that are very neatly mowed and manicured, really. You know, it's just moving away from that wee bit. It's not about letting the landscape go wild, but it's just about allowing nature back into our lives a bit more, so it provides us the services that we need.
And are you finding much of an uptake, so apart from Irish Rail, our councils and the NRA and so on?
Yeah, do you know, we've really been overwhelmed by the amount of support that the plan got when we decided to do it. You know, there wasn't funding for it and there was no legislation behind it. So it was something, it was a bottom-up approach. Mm-hmm. You know, it was about people in Ireland who knew what was happening, coming together and deciding to do something about it. And so when we started, we didn't know what kind of reception it would get. But really, as I say, we've been overwhelmed. You know, at this stage, there's more than 80 governmental and non-governmental organisations who've agreed to support it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a massive amount of support at that level. And then, you know, with individual Tidy Towns groups or with farmers, with councils, you know, we've seen a huge uptake and a huge amount of interest in it, which is fantastic and for which we're very grateful.
That's really encouraging to kind of to hear. And one of the things I noticed on your guide for councils is that you very cleverly have put in how the council can actually save some money. And I think there might be something similar there for the farming guide as well, is there?
That's right, yeah. And, you know, the beauty of a lot of these actions is that they're very small, so no one person ever has to do very much, but it takes lots and lots of us doing a wee bit. And when you put that together, it has a positive impact. And the actions often are, you know, don't do rather than do. So it's, you know, don't cut your hedgerows quite so often, don't mow the grass quite so often, maybe don't spray so much. You know, so these are all things that do save you money. And it's a slightly different way of managing the landscape than we've become used to. You know, to be honest, we've become used to manicuring and tidying up a lot. That you can do that, but it does have implications and it squeezes nature out, you know, and you know, that does have consequences then.
And we were just saying in the garden how maybe the first step might be to have a look at what you already have that is pollinator friendly, and I'm sure that can scale up then to the council level too.
Yeah, exactly. For each of the guidelines for all those sectors, you know, whether it is councils or farms, that is always the first step. You know, just check what you have, because you've probably got something that's really good already, and it's just about recognising that and then protecting it and then building on that going forward. So no, you're absolutely right. It's always just check what's good already. I would say spring is a crucial time for pollinators. You know, it's when our wild pollinators are starting to come out of hibernation. So, you know, any day now, they're perhaps not in this cold spell, but, you know, once the weather improves again, we'll start seeing bumblebees and things coming out of hibernation. It's a really, really hard time of year for them. You know, we know that one queen bumblebee has to visit about 6,000 flowers every day just to get enough energy to maintain the heat to brood her first batch of eggs.
Yeah.
You know, so it's crucial that we try to do something for them in spring. You know, if they're able to get started in spring, well, then they'll be there later in the summer when we need them to pollinate our crops or fruits and vegetables.
And it's not just about providing food for them, though, is it, Una? Because really, if they're coming in to eat from our garden or our public realm or on our farm, we need to provide somewhere for them to live and raise the next generation too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's food, shelter and safety. Mm. You know, safety is being very aware of what you're doing with pesticides, so not using them unless you absolutely have to, you know, to protect bees and keep them safe. Yeah, and then it's food and shelter. I would say food is the key driver of decline.
Mm.
So it is lack of flowers in the landscape that is the main thing that's driving the declines. You know, it's just hunger. But you're right, you know, there's no point having lots of food if there isn't then somewhere for them to nest. And it couldn't be easier to provide, you know, nesting sites for wild bees. I think often when people hear you talk about bees, they picture honeybees.
Yeah.
You know, and they think they're going to have hives, and that's not at all the case. You know, we've got 21 different kinds of bumblebees. You know, they're out there doing their own thing, but all they need is long grass, really. You know, some area, safe area of long grass where they can burrow in and make their nest. Mm-hmm. And again, we've got 77 different kinds of solitary bees. Again, they're out there looking after themselves, and most of them just need, you know, small areas of bare soil where they can burrow in and make their nest. You know, these areas are everywhere. We're just not so aware of them. And again, very, very easy to make sure that you have them in your garden, on your farm, on your council lands, you know, if you want to do something to help.
Myself, up until a couple of years ago, I always liked to see a nice tilt on any piece of bare ground. So if I'd taken out a crop, I like to have it nice and, you know, broken up and looking like it's ready for the next crop. Last year, I fell a little bit behind, and there was a part of the garden which just remained fallow. And I live on kind of a soil that kind of settles and compacts very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Within a couple of weeks, I saw that there were little holes drilled in that area of bare soil, and a whole load of mining bees had moved in and set up home in there. And so we just left them at it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said it, because it is that easy, you know.
Yeah.
I think people don't realise until they hear it said, you know, it's that easy. If you just go out and create an area of bare soil, just as you've described, they'll come and use it. You know, they don't need much help. They just need a tiny step up. You know, and if we provide it, they will come. I sometimes go into my back garden, just grass, you know, because it's mostly grass. If you just kick back a bit of, with your foot, you just kick back a bit of the grass and you leave it exposed there at bare soil, you'll find the exact same thing. You'll see these little burrows of mining soldier bees coming and using it. So really, it couldn't be easier to help if you do want to help. And hopefully on the website, you know, we've got lots of resources that explain to you how you go about doing all these things.
You might remind us of what the website address is, Una, would you?
Yeah, it's www.pollinators.ie.
That's
and
very
on
simple.
There, you know, from there you'll be able to, you know, click on gardens or schools or farms or councils or local communities, whichever sector it is that you're most interested in.
And schools would be a crucial kind of point to disseminate some of this information.
You know, absolutely. When we published the pollinator plan back in 2015, the first thing we wanted to do was then to produce a junior version of it.
Yeah.
So we produced a junior version of the pollinator plan. It's the exact same message, but just written this time for children. So that was published at the start of 2016. So it's available on the website. Yeah, it just explains, you know, the issue for children, and we've been trying to, you know, get that out into as many schools as we can. And you're right, you know, kids, they get it, and you know, they want to hear the message, they understand it, and they've been a fantastic audience in terms of...
I find kids are always fascinated by bees, and any of the times I go to do a talk on bees in any school, rapt attention for the first kind of 20 minutes before the questions turn to, you know, how many queen bees would it take to kill a queen wasp?
Or why are there no king bees?
Yeah. But for the first 20 minutes, they're absolutely fascinated, really, really into it, and great advocates for all things nature, I suppose.
Oh, they are, and they notice it in the garden. You know, I think we don't realise... Sometimes we overlook nature, you know, maybe we're so used to it, I don't know, but, you know, kids, they see things in the garden and it does resonate with them. You know?
Yeah, that's fantastic, and lovely to have those creatures in the garden and to be able to go out and notice them. But Una Fitzpatrick from the National Biodiversity Centre in Waterford, talking about the National Pollinator Plan, thank you very much for joining us today.
No problem, thank you.
And that website again then is pollinators.ie, and really I'd encourage anybody to go along to have a look at that. There's so many beautiful guides and tools that you can download, and lots of information that's presented really, really well.
I must have a look at that.
It's gorgeous.
I know part of the GLOS scheme, farmers are putting up bee hotels around the farms and mounds of sand for burrowing bees. And I think the plan is that they'll kind of do some research to see how useful they are, you know, because a lot of money has been spent on it.
Yeah.
And then inform the next set of policy, I suppose, on whether they go forward with it or they change it to something else. But I think it's really good. I've read a bit about it, actually. But to see farmers putting up little bee hotels around their hedges and on, you know, gate posts or hedge posts and stuff.
I always think that on the farm, it's probably the easiest place to make a little bit of a difference. If you just don't farm all the way to the edge, so if you just allow a little bit of space for nature, either side of a hedgerow if you're putting in a new fence, plant a hedgerow if you're looking for some way of dividing up a field, or leaving some little wild area if it's already there, makes such a huge difference. And there are so many farms across the country, you know, it makes up our countryside, really.
Yes, exactly, you know? Yeah.
So if every field had a little area left to the wild, you know, that's a fantastic resource for...
And hedges, I forgot about hedges actually being cut later, or, you know, left for a couple of years before they're cut again. They don't need to be cut every year, and that makes quite a difference too, so yeah.
Yeah, well, if you're hacking off all of the new growth on it, you're not going to get too many flowers. So yeah, allow that to grow for a little while. One video I did see, my first bumblebee rescue of the year, I saw on Twitter during the week. So those poor queens that have hibernated all winter and are out now visiting those 6,000 flowers, as Una reminded us, they can get tired, and particularly if they're caught out in the rain or if they're caught out in cold weather. So if you see a bumblebee sitting in one place on the ground, it's not flying, it's not near flowers, chances are the poor creature is exhausted.
Oh.
And it's very simple to re-energize the bee by just dissolving a little bit of sugar in some water on a spoon and presenting that to the front of the bee.
Okay.
And you'll see if the bee is alive and in trouble, the tongue will come out and it'll start to lap up that syrup, okay. So that really, really sugary water. That'll give it enough energy to warm itself up, and within a couple of minutes it'll take off and go about its business again.
My kids now would love to be spooning sugar and water to bees. That's cool.
Well, if you start looking for it, it's one of those things that you eventually notice. And you've probably stepped over a bee in the past, or you've walked around a bee, or you've told the kids not to sit on the bee. And if the bee is on the ground or on a bench or on a piece of stone, it doesn't really want to be there, so chances are it's just exhausted.
Okay.
So keep your eyes open for it now, and try the sugary water. It tends to work work an absolute treat. So we won't give too many jobs to people then this week. The weather's going to be cold, I think.
No, make some cake.
Yeah. So keep an eye open for the bees. Make yourself some cake, and have a think about seeds and other plants that you can plant for later in the year for our pollinators. Top up your bird feeders and visit pollinators.ie.
Yes.
I think that's enough to do for
this week. It's a nice weekend,
week.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we've run out of time in the kitchen garden for another week. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Remember, you can keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter. I'm at NesbitF, or Mags is at Mags Morrissey. Or you can email us at any stage, kitchengarden@ckc.ie. Today, we're going to leave you with a little piece of music. This time, it's by Tom Petty. Another one, I think, which is very appropriate to what we were talking about today. It's a song called Honey Bee from his album Wildflowers. We'll be back live next Friday from 4 to 5, and the show is repeated, of course, every Monday 4 to 5. So we'll talk to you.
Can I wish you happy birthday for the weekend first before
You've ruined our timings now. We won't get to hear all Tom Petty, but thanks very
Have
much,
Have a good
Max.
Birthday. It's thanks nice that you're 34 again.
Again, 34 again. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
All right, here we go. A little number we call Give Me Some Sugar, Little Honey, Natural Bee. Honey bee, don't be afraid,
so now.